It was as a tourney champion that I had won her heart and hand, so I entered other tourneys for her sake, but the magic was gone. I never distinguished myself again, and each defeat meant the loss of another charger and another suit of jousting armor, which must needs be ransomed and replaced. The cost could not be borne. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched with the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Jorah quote, correct?
Yeah, it's a snippet of the middle of his sad tale about how he became a slaver and got exiled from Westeros.
Oh, he's feeling sorry for himself, Ser Jorah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the things he did for love, right?
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, he convinced himself that's why it was anyway.
I don't even know. I don't even have opinions anymore about these characters. The show did me in.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Well, we'll have a whole new show to love, hate, or possibly ignore in what, another year? Two years? Next year.
It's going to be hard to ignore, I think. Even with all the animosity towards the main show.
Yeah, we'll see. I think they're going to have to start strong or they're going to drop viewers pretty fast after the end of the last show, but we'll see.
Agreed.
Yeah. So that wanton cynicism was myself, Roy. That couched optimism, was Will. And who is that third voice of reason that we have on the show today?
Hey, it's Alejandro.
Well,
excited to be on for the first time.
Is this the first time you've been?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow.
Been on a bunch of Second Sons, yeah, so it's hard for me to remember exactly.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which we've recorded. But, you know, bringing all the greatest hits out for this, the Swan Song.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do everything we can, I guess. Some more than others here in just a few days' time. Gosh, a week and a half, slightly less than. There can be only one, to borrow a line from a entirely different property, and that's what we're talking about today. What one there may be. Okay, we might talk about some manys as well, but that's the general idea anyway. The general idea coming up, because hey, this is going to be the last episode you get before Worlds, I think. Quick apology to the listeners that this is going to be a pretty short episode comparatively. We had a whole second half to the Things We Do for Love review that I did earlier in the week with Kyle and Zach, and my audio is gone, borked, totally gone. There's a slight chance
that the recording software we use, that they may be able to do something with the files on their servers. So I'm waiting to hear back on that. And I don't know that I have the willpower to do another episode re-record where I just listen to the other people's audio and then I talk as if I was actually there with them all over again. That was a nightmare. So we're here to talk Worlds instead. Yeah, yeah. And it was a review pack the time that happened before. Yeah.
So that's like 2 hours of your life.
Just pretending to be in a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh man, based on my memory and the joke the two of them just made, what do I remember happened right here?
Oh man. Worst. That's rough.
Yeah, so there is a slight chance that there will never actually be a review for the second half of The Things We Do for Love. We'll see.
Well, if you really want very thought out opinions of that pack, you can listen to the Second Sons episode that Aaron and I did that is now available on the Second Sons feed. It's 3 hours, so you can really enjoy yourselves. Dig into it.
Oh, I'm a little surprised you guys didn't go a little faster through that. I figured there would be a lot of cards where Aaron would just say no, and then you would just go to the next card.
No, it's the last one. It was fun. Good. It was very fun.
Good.
The pack's not that bad.
Pulled a page out of the old Wars to Come playbook and reviewed the art on some of those things too.
Well, we were specifically requested by Jess Thompson to review the art. So, you know, if the people ask, we're gonna do what they ask. And, you know, I'm well known for my eye anyway, so it's very important.
His one eye. Roy's actually a Cyclops, in case you didn't know.
Well, Aaron's son thinks I'm Cyclops, so that works.
Like Cyclops as in Scott Summers?
Cyclops as in Scott Summers, yes.
Okay, that's awesome. I would totally embrace that. Run with it, man.
Sure.
Well, that was considerably less amusing to anyone other than myself, but alas, these things happen. Moving on then, awkwardly and quickly, so we can get into the meat of our segment, and that is Worlds. It is coming up faster than I can believe. I don't know about anybody else, but I do not feel nearly as prepped this time around as usual. So we're gonna go ahead and, you know, take care of all my preparation right here on the show, and we're gonna chit chat about some predictions on, you know, what's most popular, what actually wins it, what doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell, that kind of thing. So let's jump in. Let's see. Now, I know I'm playing on Saturday. I don't know about Roy.
I think all three of us are playing.
How about
on Saturday,
yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think all three of us are on Saturday, right? Because Alejandro, what are you doing on Friday?
Day 1A. I'm super excited about
that. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That's very, very exciting. I think that's a absolutely great choice that FFG made to have you. I think you're an excellent Thrones commentator. So yeah. I'm very glad to hear that you will be doing the play-by-play for Evan.
For Evan or with Evan? Doing the color? Will it be both of you or just...
Yeah, I guess we haven't talked about what our roles are, but I imagine myself more as a color commentator, but maybe I'll do the play-by-play. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I know Glazer's the color commentator. Okay. He already told me that. So, but that's about as surprising as the sun coming up tomorrow morning. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a powerful 1-2 punch that we've got Alejandro doing the commentary on Friday and Glazer doing it Saturday, Sunday. I mean, maybe Alejandro could also do it on Sunday, but hopefully he won't. He'll be playing since Aaron's not playing any of the days. You know, he has the opportunity to do 2 days compared to hopefully Alejandro will
hopefully
be.
Hopefully I'll play. And if not, you know, I enjoy doing commentary so much that, like, you know, maybe I throw my last match if it's winning it. We'll see.
Well, hey, look, Alejandro, if we get impaired in the last round, you know, I'll gladly take a concession so you can do commentary. I am not above that.
We'll need to take that one for the team.
Yeah, definitely.
Appreciate it.
It's a win-win for everyone.
Even the listeners at home.
Yeah, sure. So I think we could talk maybe a little bit about what the texture of the first couple, of the days is going to be. So the impression that I get is that most Europeans are playing on Friday. Is that...
I don't have very much insight into what days, but historically they have played on Friday. So, assuming that trend continues,
yeah.
I would predict that too.
I think that the Brits are playing Friday. I know also Canadians are playing on Friday. I know like the Thunder Bay crew and some of the other Canadians that are coming down with them are playing Friday, which makes sense, right? They have to take that extra day off work to get there. So it makes sense because the thing that kind of sucks is if you don't play on Friday, you play on Saturday and you're not there Friday, there's kind of like nothing to do if the Swiss doesn't go well for you on Saturday, which I'm slightly worried about myself. So sort of getting that out, play on Friday, play melee on Saturday, I think is a really good idea for a lot of people, particularly, again, if you're traveling afar, which the Europeans and the Canadians.
Yeah, there's at least one Canadian. Francis is coming down playing Saturday, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I would also say that there might be a benefit to it. Like, the brain power involved in playing Melee is very different, even if it is one that you are interested in. And if you just take it casually, then it's even more different. So there might be something to be said for playing Swiss rounds on Friday and then having kind of a recoup day before having to tackle things again on Sunday.
Yeah, that's fair.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. But yeah.
The gaminess, guys.
So then thinking about sort of where the meta is right now. What our testing showed was that there's sort of like five decks that are sort of out as sort of like top decks. And for those of you who have listened to me do the how and the why of it, or what I've talked in the show, I like to think kind of like systematically of these things, where I kind of break them into levels, where like level one are the sort of default best decks, and they are the ones that are probably going to be the most common. And then the second level are the ones that beat those decks, or one of those decks, but have some other weaknesses that can be exploited by some of the rogue decks that will probably show up. So I think the three best decks going into this next weekend or this weekend, whenever it will be this weekend, Will, or is it coming out this Friday?
The
31st.
Yeah, the hope is to get this out tomorrow. So next weekend for Worlds. So
next weekend. To me, the level one decks are Barako Horror, Targ, Sea of Blood, and Lannister Shadows, whether that's Kingdom of Shadows or HRD for its Shadows location. I don't know. We tested both, and they were kind of different, good in different ways, but kind of just the Lannister Shadow strategy is there. Those are sort of the three top decks that everyone needs to be prepared for, and I think are really going to dominate, at least in like presence. Does that line up with what you've seen, Alejandro? I would
probably include one or two more in there, but certainly those three are the top dogs, right? So,
well, maybe my second level will get a couple other decks. So I think level two, which are not quite as good decks, but they do have a tendency to beat at least a couple of these decks, and that's Night's Watch Valyrian Steel, I think is a level two deck. All these decks are good and respectable to play, but I think its power level is a little bit below that of the top three. And then the other one for me would be Stark Fealty. I think that Stark Fealty has some good matchups in the level one, but it's just not quite as powerful as those sort of highly consistent level one.
Yeah, I definitely would put both for me, the Stark deck is Crossing. The Fealty deck I like a lot. Like it's you know, it's certainly a level 2 deck in this instance, but it in my hands just feels underpowered. And the Crossing deck is like the other way around, where the Crossing deck is so fast. I think in my eyes, both of those are level 1, and then the Fealty deck is level 2. But splitting hair here.
I definitely would give a vote for Crossing still as well.
That's really interesting. I mean, this could just be one of those perspectives that my testing group has, where like if you want to play a fast deck, you should just play Barak Kohor. I feel like Barak Kohor is more consistent and more resilient than Stark Crossing, but I could be wrong. And that the Stark Fealty, you're not playing Stark, I guess, for the speed. You're playing it for its ability to answer a lot of the bullshit that other decks are doing, which is, you know, what that the deck that won. Oh yeah, what is the big tournament that was won by Stark? Was it Stalik? Stalik. Yeah, I was like, I know it was Stalik, but I couldn't remember. It was also the UK the big giant UK regional was also won by Stark. I know there's another recent tournament, the big like sizable one that was won by Stark. I think that's kind of where Stark is, that like policeman role, where I do agree with you, Alejandro. I think on a card by card basis, the power level is much lower in those Stark builds, but they can just sort of shut down some strategies that, you know, you're just picking up a lot of equity there.
The appeal to me, you know, I generally agree with you that Barak Kohor is the more powerful deck between it and Stark Crossing if you're talking about Rush. The appeal though is that the Barak Kohor deck, if you don't see either of the kings, you know, stumbles a lot, and there's 6 of them, and you can find them in different ways. But if you don't find them, you just stumble too much, and you kind of lose to yourself. Whereas the Stark Crossing deck, you know, provides threats in lots of different ways.
That's fair. I mean, I've played against a lot of Barak Kohor at both testing and in tournaments and online a little bit, and they've never not had the kings. So maybe I just, you know, am overestimating their ability to see the kings consistently. So, but I do think that's a good point. The Stark deck does have more threat diversity, which has always been a benefit of Stark Crossing, even compared to Greyjoy Crossing. But I think we all agree that the most common deck, the most people, the boogeyman, I guess, of the format is Stark Sea of Blood. Oh, not Stark Sea of Blood. Excuse me. Targ Sea of Blood. I'm sorry. My brain went back to this time last year. Was Targ.
Yeah, Sea of Blood, absolutely. Right? That's the one that everybody's talking about.
Well, you have the most experience of us playing it, right? Because you played it for Team America, right? So where do you think it's sitting now? It has more cards now, right?
Yeah.
Pre-box or post-box?
Quite a bit recently. I played it at Stalik before the box came out and didn't make the cut. I went 5-3. Mm-hmm.
Still a great record.
And then I played the post-box version, which is way more powerful with these ridiculous cards. The thing about the post-box version is that it is the boogeyman, and you should be putting in answers, right, in the form of plots. And so that's the concern for that one, right? Like, I think it's probably card for card the most powerful deck, maybe. And so for that reason, everybody should be targeting it. It's you know, insanely efficient all over the place for all the different reasons that people complain about with Kotho and Womb and overwhelming numbers in the Sea of Blood agenda.
Go ahead, Will.
Well, I was just going to say, thinking about that deck, I'm anticipating that we have a pretty good turnout for Worlds this year, right? And then we have a lot of returning people or very, you know, part-time, only play a couple tournaments a year or whatever sort of people that want to see things off. And I'm kind of curious, is the Targ Sea of Blood deck and its really pretty linear, straightforward game plan, is that probably one of the decks that you expect those people to gravitate to if they turn up at Worlds? I personally think that's going to pump some of the numbers, but I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, certainly of these five decks, it's by far the one with the most clear path to victory, which makes it the one that you want to pick up as a player who doesn't have quite the experience necessary for the other ones. There is definitely a lot of things at the margins with the list, like, you know, people call it a no scale deck, which I don't generally agree with. It's easy to pick up, but there's a lot of intricacies too. I agree that might be what pumps up the numbers, is that it's got a very, very clear path to victory. So
I also don't think, historically speaking, that like inexperienced or returning Stark Thrones players gravitate towards those kind of decks or any kind of decks like that. I think, historically speaking, they just play rogue decks. You know, I mean, unless they're like hyper competitive people who are coming back to one tournament. So like, if we get a few of our former world champions, like say Ryan Jones, I don't know if Ryan is going or not, you know, you might see him do that, right? Where he doesn't have a lot of time to prep. His life is totally a different place, but he wants to come and hang out with everybody and play some games, relive the old days. Yeah. He's a hyper competitive dude. He's going to want to play something like that. But for most people, those like casual medium players, they're going to probably actually be more likely to play their favorite faction. Okay. This is their last chance to play it in a competitive sense. But I do think what we'll end up seeing is a lot of 3-3 Targ Sea of Blood. Because I do think there's going to be, I think a lot of mildly invested to well invested players are going to bring it. And I think if early on in the Swiss, if you get the right pairings, it'll be good. But as you rise, I think Targ Sea of Blood's going to see some real issues, and it might not have the best day two record, because people are ready for it. Somewhat similar to Worlds last year with Greyjoy, where, you know, Greyjoy was pretty represented in, you know, the Swiss. But, you know, there were some good Greyjoy players, you know, Aurora. Why is my name blanking on the British?
Joe Zimmer.
Joe Zimmer. Yeah. But, like, compared to, like, what it was in the Swiss, right, it wasn't as high, right? And then, of course, famously, you know, Leonard didn't play any Greyjoy, right, on his way. Leonard did the level 3 strategy where he brought the deck that beat all the decks trying to beat Greyjoy, and he got a card design and a world championship out of it. Really amazing meta call there, and luck. But, you know, it takes luck to win any big tournament. So that, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of what happens at this Worlds, where you see a lot of, you know, there'll be some good players playing it, obviously, like Joe, right, and Mike. They were playing it, and they're really fantastic players. But, you know, plenty of good to okay players were playing it, and they just didn't get there. And I think that we might see that, because people are going to be ready for Targaryen. Yeah.
They're also, like, the answers are in the plots, which is pretty important for, you know, the boogeyman. If there's a boogeyman in the meta and you can answer it with plots, it's pretty important that's different than being able to pack or having to pack a bunch of in-draw deck answers.
Yeah, that's right. I also think you're right. I also think a lot of the answers aren't, like, super silver bullety. They're, like, I don't know, gold bullets.
Sure.
Where, you know, they have like plain barring, right? It's not a dead card in other matchups, right?
Yeah.
King plot.
It's insane. It's insanely good in both.
Right.
Two of the three that we highlighted at the beginning of this, right? The Targ deck and the Lanny deck.
Right. So comparing it to other linear decks that have been threats at Worlds, one of which I think did you play the Hyper Viper, Alejandro? No, okay. But your friends did. And, you know, like the Hyper Viper deck required you to just distort your plot deck in such a way to consistently beat it, you know, unless you were playing like one of the couple of strategies that just were good against it, that makes it a bad boogeyman, because you're giving up so much equity trying to beat these combo players that when you don't play combo, you're down 3 plots. And I don't think that's the case with Targ Sea of Blood. So that also, I think, bodes well for a little bit more of a diverse meta than there would be otherwise. So are there any rogue decks that the two of you think that might surprise people? You know, maybe a Targ variant that isn't just murdering people with Dothraki? You know, like Aaron, I mean, on this show, when we reviewed the box,
right.
You know, Aaron and I, Will, thought that it was going to be Valyrian Steel. Targ Valyrian Steel was going to be the, like, out-of-the-box busted deck. And that's not really come to be the case. You know, some people actually make fun of 8-cost Annie and call her unplayable card. Do we think there's any rogue decks out there that might be good?
The Targ Valyrian Steel deck. It probably doesn't want to run Danny in my experience, but I think it's a good deck. But we'll see. I think that there's, like, some very interesting Conclave variants that have been going around recently that could definitely show up, right?
Yeah.
Lanny.
Yeah, Lanny Conclave surprised me.
That's the Brat, yeah, the Sam Brat special?
The Neo Kimball one at the regional down there.
Yeah, true. Neil's going to be at Worlds, right? So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him playing. That was Lanny Conclave, right? Yeah, I mean, we may have reached, you know, Conclave, and I think we've said this on this show many times. Conclave's always been threatening to be actually a good agenda. It just needs support.
Yeah.
And maybe it's reached that point. Like, that 4-cost Maester that lets you look at the top card of your deck and play it if it's not. Is really good.
And Marwyn is insane.
Making your stash or whatever, just your hand. That made a difference.
Nine cards in your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. It might be a little fragile because it does rely on some very specific unique characters. You know, if you don't see Marwyn, you don't see that Tyrell person, you know, you're kind of stuck with, like, really good card selection for 7 cards. But that's what I've always found Conclave. If as long as those 7 cards are good, right? 7.
Yeah. Until you get Marwyn and then you get
As long as and, you know, as long as those 7 cards are good, you're in a good spot. But if you get, like, 4 limited locations and 2/2 drops, and, you know, maybe 1 event or something, you're in trouble.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot still to be explored, whether or not people actually explore it when there's, you know, lots of really good decks already available. We'll find out
at Worlds.
I hope people bring something busted. Like, I hope there's some player or some team
that
just brings something busted. Maybe it's some Bratzian with Eamon combo deck out of Conclave. I wouldn't put it past them figuring out how to do it.
I feel like the way we've had the regional season squished right up into this. I mean, there's definitely still multiple regionals going on this weekend before Worlds
in Germany too, so which is a very competitive event too.
I feel like that's really kind of skewed some of the info that we have available to us normally at this time, and also kind of skewed our digestion of it. I think, you know, without that room to breathe in between, like, there's more kind of open experimentation and picking things apart during the regional season that I don't feel like we've had this year. Plus, I think, of course, the holidays through late November in through the beginning of January probably didn't help either. But it definitely feels like we haven't pushed as much info out there. There may be more things flying under the radar that people have been hammering out that they want to surprise folks with here at the last Worlds. I'm not sure.
One thing that's still available, I don't think it's even behind it all. The World Cup lists are still out there, and I still poke in at them. You know, what's a Lannister strategy that might be viable, or a Martell one, right? Because they're kind of behind. Like, is there a counter to all everything that's going on in there? And just try to gain insight from seeing the deck list of people put together as teams for the world.
Yeah, that's very true, Alejandro. I think it's also made making a testing gauntlet much easier than it's been in the past. Like, we didn't have to build anything from scratch, which always ate up a lot of time and also led to distractions. People are like, "Oh yeah, look at these Lannister cards. I love Lannister. I'm gonna spend 2 hours instead of just sleeving up Lannister cards so we can test to, you know, build a Lannister deck," and then ends up not working, and then we
waste time.
So that's definitely true. I think that the other thing is, like, attendance has kind of been in the garbage can these regionals. And so that's another thing. So, you know, I really do think plenty of people are sort of waiting for Worlds. And the question is, it'll be interesting to see. I have a feeling that Europeans, because it's going to be mostly the national champions, plus obviously their crew and plus some of the regulars, but I feel like they're going to be a lot thirstier than the Americans this year at Worlds. I could be wrong, but I just get that kind of feeling. I think that the Europeans are still thirsty to sort of like close Worlds on their dominance. Like, they have just dominated second edition. The only world champion who from America is Mirando for second edition. Sam as well, you know, whether that counts as an actual world champion, you know, people debate, but, you know, they've really dominated Worlds the last couple of years. And I think they're thirsty to make it, that's going to be 4 out of 5?
No. Well, we have.
Am I adding an additional person?
Yeah.
Four out of four.
We've had two European champions.
Mirando.
Sam and Mirando, right?
Yeah. I was going to say 4 if you count Sam.
Sam, 4 if you count Sam. Okay, so there's been 3. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So 4 if you count Sam. Okay.
2 of 3.
So what? 2 of 3. Okay.
So let's count Sam. Let's pretend it is currently a tie. Oh, and this year is going to break the tie.
Maybe. I mean, maybe we'll see. But I could be wrong. But I think that that's just a feeling I get. That could be just an East Coast thing. People are more interested in the social and part and seeing people and saying goodbye to people than they are grinding it out. But maybe, you know, maybe California, maybe the Midwest are all.
Ooh. Yeah, we've been doing some grinding. There's not a whole lot of complaints to say over here. At least in Northern California. I don't know about Southern California where they're at.
It's hit and miss in the Midwest. Some of us are in. Some of the, I think, more prominent suspects, like, say, Quincy, not attending. So,
wait, they're not going?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a bad weekend exactly. for them.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, that hurts the Midwest chances.
I mean, it may end up being a bad weekend for me. Like, currently the weather estimate is not good for that weekend. So coming out of Philadelphia. So if my flight gets canceled, I'm out of luck.
Fingers crossed then. Fingers crossed for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, you're flying out of San Francisco, and that's always a diddly airport. Fine.
No, I'm flying out of Sacramento, actually.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yep. Raining. Still there. We'll see.
Here, to really put you guys on the spot then, so that we've got something for people to berate us about later. Push came to shove. If you had to name one player, you know, is going this year that you would you'd put your money on to Joss down, who's it going to be?
Andres.
You stole it. You stole it from me. Yeah. So if it's not Andras, I'll go with Hanno.
Okay, that's I had no idea, but that's awesome. Okay. I'm excited for that.
I'm pretty sure he was. I could be wrong. If he's not, then Reinhardt. Like one of the people from the German sphere, I think will take it down. Yeah. And that includes Andras. So,
I mean that would make sense. They did just come our World Cup over.
I think they are. That Germany is probably the strongest meta in second edition.
Hard to argue that. Yeah. Well,
you gonna bet on an American?
I think I am gonna throw my money behind Wama this year. Guys had a pretty hot time of it in second ed, and I think this might be his chance to really cap things off.
I mean, it's always a safe bet to bet on James to do well. So that he was definitely on my short list. Wama is maybe the GOAT of second edition. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of back and forth you can have with him and like Reinhardt, who won Euros and Worlds in the same year. But he's definitely in contention for the best player in second edition, and also one of the best people in second edition too. So that's always good when very good people are also the best players in the game. So,
well, here to really, really put you on the spot then, with people's opinions, what about Joust? Or geez, wow, good one. How about Melee is what I meant so to be, say.
You just tricked this man. I don't even know what degenerate stuff you're doing to Melee these days, Will.
I don't know, playing Baratheon. I feel like that's a safe bet. I know some other folks that still swear by Fat Cat. I think it's reasonable. We'll see what happens.
I had such a miserable time playing Fat Cat at Worlds last year that...
didn't a Fat Cat deck win Dalek Melee too?
I did not see...
I think it was a Stark Sparrows deck. Maybe it wasn't Fat Cat, but...
Okay, that is a Sparrow deck. Sounds more familiar. Yeah, I do not recall for dead certain now.
We'll see. Yeah, you got me, Will. I have no idea.
I really don't know. You will, because remember, I don't... Did we talk about this in the main episode, or did we talk about this in Props and Slops? That I think that people should just concede until you are the final Melee World Champion. So
I think that might have been Props and Slops, but you know what? I'll take it.
You're not above it.
You know what? Normally I would say yes, but this time I would say no. I labored for far too long as the third host on Two Champs and a Chump. This is the last chance to rectify that.
It's true. I know that feeling. You know, and Melee's been without a world champion since 2017, right? I think, right?
How weird.
Yeah. So it's time to just sort of crown one for a while. And it'll be good to be able to do that. Indeed.
All right. Well,
it might be Alex Black playing some degenerate thing in Melee. Like,
just making everybody quit.
There we go. Is Alex going to Worlds, Alejandro? Okay, cool. So Alex Black, yes, he wins playing some degenerate thing like he did last year.
Playing Melee.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
He might.
Oh, well. I didn't expect a lot of deep Melee discussion, but I wanted to put you on the spot. So.
I have legitimately not played a game of Melee since the miserable ones I had at Worlds.
That was 2017,
I guess, then.
You should have came out to Nationals. We had a great time.
I would have loved to come out of Nationals. It just is not a good weekend for me. So, And you also live in the middle of nowhere.
100% true.
Philadelphia will.
100%.
I played a single game of Melee in 2.0. And that was when Vince was in town. And he, you know, kind of convinced us to do it we were at a bar. And he had a table. And he's like, yeah, let's play some Melee. And we only had Joust decks. So we played Melee with Joust decks and proxies for titles. And I had no idea what any of them did still.
What the title?
I've played a lot of Melee in second edition, but it just, the format kind of, I think just, I don't know. I would have played it this year if I was able to, but I'm not able to make it on Friday.
Ends the breaks. I'm all in. I've been having a blast with Melee and second ed, so I can plan on continuing that.
Yeah, you know, I participated at the Gen Con finals where no one won. It's just not been the same.
Yeah, I can understand that. That was a weird time. What better danger zone to have somebody entered to end our short episode this week?